Welcome to the Exceptional Sales Leader Podcast with Darren Mitchell. If you're a sales leader looking to take your leadership to a whole new level, then this is the podcast for you. We'll be exploring tips, techniques, and strategies to help you take your leadership to the exceptional level and allow you to enjoy more money, more meaning, and better sales results. Hands up, those of you who love presenting, love getting in front of an audience and pitching a message or telling a story. Now, that's a question that I ask a lot of sales teams and a lot of leaders, and you'd be amazed at how many people do not put their hand up. In fact, most people would rather do anything else other than present in front of a group. And that's a topic for today's conversation. Hello and welcome. This is Darren Mitchell, and you're listening to the Exceptional Sales Leader Podcast. So great you can join me on this beautiful Thursday, the 17th of September, 2020. Now, I've just come off a really great little half-day workshop with a group of leaders here in Melbourne, and it was a virtual workshop. Actually, it was people from all around the country when I think about it. And we were talking about presenting and pitching messaging, pitching stories, pitching proposals to potential clients. And overwhelmingly, when I asked that question at the beginning of the session, how many people actually love presenting? I think out of about 16 people on the call, there was one person that put their hand up. Everybody else would rather do anything else than present. Now, when you think about it, this is really interesting, and it's a gross generalization, I know, but I've often heard people talk about the fact that when it comes to presenting, then if they were going to a funeral, most people would rather be the person in the casket at the front of the church than the person delivering the eulogy. Now, when you think about that logically, that's ridiculous, because if you're in the casket, it means you're no longer. But it just gives you an insight in terms of what people are thinking, how they think about, I guess, having to get up in front of an audience, whether it be a large audience or a small audience, and deliver some form of message, because they put so much pressure on themselves to want to do a great job that they'd rather avoid it at all costs. And this was no different to the group that I was talking with today and taking them through a half-day workshop on how to improve their level of confidence and how to give them a structure and a bit of a framework to be able to then increase their capacity to not only plan more effective presentations and more effective pitches, but also give them the confidence that, you know what, irrespective of your background, irrespective of your experience level, with the right attention to detail and with the right process and the right structure and with the right tips, you can actually deliver a really impactful and powerful presentation that moves people into some form of action. And so it was just an intrigue, another straw poll that is no different to any other group that I work with when it comes to presenting. And I'll just ask you the question as well. So as a sales leader, when you're looking at your sales team and having to go to, because you no doubt be doing pitches to organizations, whether that be small one-on-one sort of pitches, or in some cases you might be pitching to a board or pitching to a group of people who are come together as a committee, a steering committee, to make a decision or make a recommendation. Many people find it really, really challenging to stand up and actually deliver a presentation. And in fact, when most people do the presentation, for whatever reason, they would rather sit down and have a more casual conversation, which in some circumstances it may actually be relevant, but in most situations, if you can get up and stand in front of a group and do it well and do it with confidence and deliver a powerful message, that can be the difference that differentiates you against all of your competition. So today I just wanted to reflect on some of the comments and some of the questions that came back in relation to presenting. Now, not necessarily around the structure or the planning component, but more to do with the delivery and how do we actually adjust ourselves in the moment, and how do we deal with some of the people that might ask questions or try to take us off track, with the express intent of hopefully giving you some tips or maybe some information that can help you in your quest to improve your level of presenting, but also pass on to your team as well, that if they are having some challenges around presenting, if they suffer from nervousness before a presentation and levels of anxiety, that thinking about what are some things you could put in place or they could start doing to help remove or at least diminish that level of anxiety and that level of nervousness to the point where they can feel comfortable and, dare I say it, confident, and look forward to making a presentation to anybody. And so we talked about a number of things today, and one of the key things around any presentation is doing a clear audience analysis and really understanding who your audience is and understanding that people are different. And from that perspective, people are different and they actually tend to learn in a different way as well. Now, in previous podcasts, I've talked about the different types of people that you're going to be dealing with, and typically there's around four different behavior styles or personal profiles, if you like, that people will fall into. Not that we're going to categorize anybody, but essentially there are four different types of people. Now, whether you've done do Myers-Briggs, DISC, Extended DISC, Reach Profiles, Human Synergistics, it's all based on psychology at a really macro level. There are four types of people. You're going to have people who are interested in what's in it for them. They're going to be quite expressive, quite big picture, and they're looking for the positive outcome, and they just want to get moving and let's just make a decision and work it out as we go. You're going to have people who are a little bit more conservative. They are thinking about, well, how does this impact my team? How does this impact others? They'll be thinking about more about the people elements of it. You're going to have people who are going to be really focused on detail and want to be asking huge amounts of detail. And these are the guys that are going to want to know, when you pitch something, how do you come to this conclusion? Or how does this process work? How does this implementation program work? How does this solution work? So they're going to be very detailed. And then you'll have the people who are just wanting to get to the bottom line. So they're the dominant types. They're sometimes referred to as the alpha types. They just want to know what the bottom line is, how much is it going to cost, when you're going to implement it, and just get it done. And they're very direct, and sometimes they can come across as quite harsh or quite abrupt, and sometimes quite abrasive. So they're the four different types of people. So when it comes to presenting and planning, we need to understand that there are always going to be a mix, or in some cases, depending on the numbers, more prevalence of one type than the other. But the key thing around presenting is understanding that if you've got any more than one person in the room, chances are you're going to have a variance of different personal styles and personal types. So being aware of that and adjusting our message and making sure that we're covering all the key attributes of what those individual behavior styles are going to start looking for and listening for is really important to stack the odds in your favor for getting a great outcome and making sure that your presentation or your pitch has the cut through that ultimately you're looking for. And that's not to say we're pigeonholing people, but it's just the behavior style. So there'll be four different people that, as we talked about, that will be looking for specific pieces of information. And when they find that information, they'll be happy. So the key thing on us as the presenter, as the person pitching, is to make sure we cover all those areas, because if we don't, then chances are we're missing out on an opportunity to influence somebody. But the other thing to think about as well is how people listen and how people learn. And this is something I learned through a lot of presentations and talking with a lot of mentors and working with a lot of mentors and really getting a deep understanding of how different people process information and how they learn information. So I was asked this question today in the session, and one of the guys said, well, how do I break a habit of every time I'm thinking about and processing something that a presenter has just said or person in front of me have just said, I've got this habit of looking away or looking up and not engaging with a person. And I sometimes feel as if that creates a really bad impression that I'm not interested, which is not the case. And I said, well, this is where you need to understand that different people are different and they process information in a different way. And I said, well, think back to when you're at school. Sitting in the classroom, you're going to have some people who are really focused on the teacher and what the teacher's saying. And they might be writing notes, but they need to see what the teacher's writing on the board in order to then understand and comprehend the information that's being shared. Then you're going to have other people that look as if they're completely aloof. They're looking out the window, they're looking up, they're looking everywhere, but looking at the teacher. And it may be that they appear to be disengaged, but in fact they're not. What they're thinking about, and this is what's happened over many, many years now, where teachers have started to understand the psychology and the learning style of children in particular, is that people learn differently. And so you're going to have somebody who's looking up who doesn't need to actually look. They're more of an auditory learner. So they're taking everything in. They need to be able to listen. And looking out the window or looking up is where the answers are for them. And that's how they're actually paying attention. They don't have to look at the person in front of them. Then you're going to have people who potentially are sitting down and they're listening, but they're also doodling, or they appear to be doodling. Now, I have this a lot. I get a lot of people in workshops, and hopefully it's not an indication of how exciting or boring my workshops are, but there are some people in the workshops that will spend a whole day throughout the day drawing on their paper, and it could be just, you know, really interesting shapes and so forth. And when you have a conversation with them, and when you ask questions, or when you're having Q&A type time, what's really interesting is these people are fully engaged because they've heard everything you've said, and they bring some insights into the conversation as well. But what's different is they are quite kinesthetic, so they need to be able to be doing something, writing something, touching something, in order to then be in a position where they can now really fully concentrate on the message that's being demonstrated. And so when I answer that question, I hopefully put the person at ease, thinking that, well, just because you are looking away from the presenter or from the person in front of you doesn't automatically indicate or insinuate that you're not interested or that you're being disrespectful. And I said, well, when people don't understand the different learning styles, sometimes the impression may well be that you are being disrespectful. I said, in that sort of circumstance, if you're able to have a conversation with somebody, just say, look, I'm looking away, that's a really interesting point, and just say something to verify that what the person said, you've actually listened and that you're processing information. And then have a conversation or ask them the question, or just say to them, look, when I'm looking away, it means that I'm actually processing this and thinking about this. And most people will then understand that it's okay when that happens. For a lot of people that don't understand the different learning styles, that can be quite a bit of a put off, but think about that. So when you're presenting, the key message there is understand that different people will actually process information differently and they'll therefore learn differently. And so the key thing is to then be able to adjust our style in the presentation to be able to cater for the different types of learning. You're going to have people who are quite auditory, you're going to have others who are quite literally visual, and then you'll have some kinesthetic ones. So don't prejudge, but it's important at any presentation to think about how do I continually check in with the audience and with the participants to make sure that they're listening, that what I'm talking about is resonating, and what sort of insights do they have and what sort of questions do they have. And this is not about picking on people, because the other thing around presenting, of course, is people's attention spans are only so long. So if you're going to have a dry monologue for 30 minutes and expect everybody to hang off every single word you're saying, then you're absolutely delusional. Every, you know, I think 5 to 7 minutes, or maybe even shorter than that, it's really important that we check in and we ask a question or we do some form of activity that brings people's attention back into the room, because sometimes people can drift off, and some drift off a lot quicker than others. So think about that. The other question I got asked this morning as well was one in relation to questioning techniques, and it was a really interesting one. And this is a question that I often get, and it's when you're doing a presentation and somebody in the middle of the presentation asks you a question, but it may not necessarily be relevant to the topic or the outcome you're trying to look for. Now, I've always said, and I've always maintained, and you might have a different opinion on this, and that's perfectly okay. I've always maintained that in any sort of presentation, I want to make it as interactive as I possibly can and as experiential as I possibly can. And for that to happen, I need to have people interacting, and therefore I will welcome comments, insights, questions, challenges. So I don't necessarily wait until the end of the session to have a Q&A session. I'll still have time at the end of a session for that, but I will encourage questions as we go. And so the way I answered this question was, well, when somebody asks you a question in the middle of a conversation, and sometimes they might ask a question which interrupts you in your train of thought, I said, well, always welcome that question and bring it on and give them the space and give them the confidence to be able to ask that question. Because the other thing you're doing as well is you're teaching the other people that it's okay to ask a question, and there's no such thing as a bad question. So you're not pushing them away, you're not ignoring them, you're not chastising them, you're not criticizing them, you're not saying, well, that's a stupid question. You're embracing the question and you're accepting the question. Now, when that question is asked, you've got a choice to make at that particular moment. The first choice is, okay, do I answer this question right now? Because the other thing I've got to be conscious of is this question relevant to the topic that I'm talking about, and is this relevant to the outcome that I'm trying to drive towards? So if it's relevant and if it's pertinent that the team needs to know this, and it's relevant right now and it's timely for me to answer that question right now, then I'll do that. But if it's not, then I'll use a little technique that I've seen a lot of great presenters do and great facilitators, where I'll say something like, well, that's a really interesting question and I appreciate you sharing that. I think I might be able to answer that question in the following 20 minutes in terms of the content. But if I don't, can you remind me again to answer that question towards the end? Now, what that does is, particularly if there's a question that you don't want to answer yet, or you think it's completely irrelevant to the topic, then by respectfully pushing it off or deflecting it, you're not completely dismissing it, but you're saying, really interesting question, I appreciate you sharing that. I think I'm going to cover that off, but just in case I don't, let's have some time towards the end of the session. And if I don't cover that off, can you please remind me to answer that question? So what that does, it validates the person that I've listened to the question. It says that, you know what, I don't think I'm going to answer that right now, but I'll answer that towards the end. But I think my content will answer that. But then I've also put it back on the onus back on the individual to ask me that question at the end of the session. Now, I'll then say, as part of that, I'll say, is that okay that you can do that? And if they say yes, great. They've now taken ownership to ask me that question. Now, if they don't ask me that question at the end, then obviously I've answered the question as we've gone through the content, or they've forgotten to ask the question, or the question wasn't relevant in the first place. In either case, I've maintained my credibility, and I've said to the other team members, hey, it's okay to ask a question, but the onus is back on the individual to bring it back up into the Q&A session. So that's a really powerful technique that I've used a lot in relation to getting questions asked in a session that you don't necessarily want to answer right there and then, because maybe it's not consistent with the outcome you're trying to drive towards. And the other key question was asked as well around eye contact and how important eye contact is, particularly in presentations, but also when you've got one-on-one. And one of the people asked, well, how long is too long in terms of eye contact? Because I find myself, and this is what she said, I find myself talking to one person who seems to be the most engaging in the particular presentation, and then I find myself talking to them the entire time and almost ignoring everybody else. And I said, well, really interesting. That's just a natural response to, I guess, presenting in front of a group. And it makes you feel comfortable knowing that there's somebody in the audience that is resonating with your message or helping you out, sometimes classified as quote unquote a rescuer, that enables you to then place all of your attention on that particular individual. A key technique to get away from that, to make sure you're covering everybody, because in any presentation where you need to influence a group, you need to maintain your eye contact quite evenly across the whole group, unless there's a designated decision maker or key influencer in the room and you know who they are, in which case you spend about 60 to 70% of your time focusing your eye contact on that particular individual and the rest of the time for everybody else. But if that's not the case, then it has to be everybody evenly. And I said, well, this is one technique that I use a lot, and I've taught many, many people to do this. And it's a concept known as one thought, one person. And all you do is you're maintaining eye contact with one person long enough for a thought to come into your mind and then leave. And that could be just counting in your head up to five, and it's really slowly. One, two, three, four, five, and then you move on to the next person. And by doing that, and if you consciously work out eye contact, eye contact, eye contact, doing that will enable you to make sure you're covering off everybody in the room equally and not having your time dedicated to one particular person. And then the other question that was asked was in relation to, well, how do I do this in a bigger group where there's lots and lots of people? How do I give the impression that I'm actually maintaining eye contact? Because he said, I've been taught, well, you stand up and you start looking at the back of the room and you pick a point at the back of the room and you just talk to the back of the room. And I said, well, that's great. How engaging is that for the audience? And he said, well, not very engaging at all. And I said, exactly. And I said, for in a major group, you know, like in a conference setup, you might have tables, or you might have groups of people sitting in chairs. The clustering technique is a classic strategy for eye contact, because what you do then is from the stage or from the front of the room, you literally cluster groups of people together, and then out of each cluster, you pick one person to focus your eye contact on, and what the impression is that everybody in that little cluster will then also think that you're looking at them, because you're going to be far enough away that the impression is that you're looking at each individual. And so they get the feeling that the presenter is looking at me. Now you do that with every single group or every single cluster within the audience, and that engages them and keeps your eye contact and increases your level of capability for the presentation. So there's just a couple of techniques and tips that we talked about today, and hopefully that is of value to you. So when you're presenting, the key elements to remember is all of the what I call the one percenters, and these are the soft skills that can make or break a presentation. And it's not the content like many people think it is. So understand, first of all, the people are different, they'll think differently, they'll learn differently, so we need to adjust our style accordingly. And also make sure that we are responding to questions or encouraging questions, because you want engagement. And use the little strategy I talked about if that's something of value to you as well. And from an eye contact perspective, make sure that you're not fixating your eyes too much on one person, but spread it across the group. And of course, all of this couldn't be possible without a positive mindset to say, you know what, I'm looking forward to this presentation, because I get the opportunity, I get the privilege to serve this particular group of people, and I get to be a messenger to give them a message that hopefully will move the dial forward for them, but also move the dial forward for me and my team and my organization. So I trust that little tips will be helpful to you. If you'd like some help doing this, or like some help with your sales team, or in fact you'd like some help to become an exceptional sales leader, let's have a conversation. Jump onto my calendar at leadwithdarren.com and we'll have a conversation. So until next time, continue to look for opportunities where you can, hey, present. Just take an opportunity to present and focus on your eye contact, focus on understanding the different styles of people and adjusting your styles. And with that, you'll be able to move a lot quicker towards being that exceptional sales leader. All the best. Thank you for listening to the Exceptional Sales Leader Podcast. I trust the information in this episode has been helpful in your journey towards becoming exceptional. And remember, please take the time to rate the show, subscribe to the show so other people can find it. But also, if I can help you, jump on my calendar, go to leadwithdarren.com and let's have a conversation about how I can help you along your journey to being exceptional.